Well, it's kind of a big experiment. We've never really done anything quite like this, where we have two opposing views on at the same time. Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and Dave Thomas, a physicist from New Mexico. He's also president of New Mexicans for Science and Reason. And by kind of a weird sort of fluke, they've been engaged together for a while now on the subject of what exactly happened on 9/11. Were the Twin Towers a victim of controlled explosions rigged by nefarious agents likely linked to the government that would have brought in thousands of tons of explosives, mainly thermite, placed strategically around the World Trade Center Tower 1, Tower 2, and Building 7? And it was in regard to Building 7 that we were talking about at the very end of the hour when Richard Gage was just about to respond to Dave Thomas. We'll let him do that. And then we'll let him bring in some more people into the conversation. Kim Johnson and Niels Herit will talk about their perspectives on this. And then it'll be your turn coming up about an hour from now. Kind of a rare 9/11 friendly debate on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So last half hour, Dave Thomas, physicist, was talking about the three different computer models that would account for the downfall of Building 7. Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. You were about to say something, and then I had to stop because we were coming up on news time.
Yes, Dave made four points that rather dismissively that need to be taken seriously and logically. First, the cause of this collapse. NIST acknowledges that the damage from the beams from the North Tower explosion did not have a significant effect on the collapse of this building. They do cite the fires. Now, the photos and videos that we have of these fires only show minimal, fairly small, isolated pockets of fire. The building was not engulfed in flames. Any review of the evidence will show that. Not only that, but those fires were out by NIST. In their Appendix L, they actually say they have photos that show that those fires were out on the 12th floor around Column 79, which is where they say the initiation of this collapse began. So this pulls the rug out from their fable of this story. Second, Dave says, oh, it would be natural for a building to fall at free fall acceleration if the core had already collapsed. Well, what's remaining is 50 very strong perimeter columns, all of which would have to have been cut once again in order to allow any free fall acceleration. Finally, there is foreknowledge of this building's collapse, plenty of it. The BBC announces the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it actually happened. CNN announced its collapse in the morning at about 11:07. And there's policemen that are saying, move it back. The building's about to blow up. And one construction worker says, keep your eye on that building. It's coming down, after hearing an explosion, for which there is plenty of evidence, by the way, of explosions. I encourage our listeners to Google YouTube, WTC-7 explosion. There's an excellent analysis. Finally, there's a side-by-side video that shows Building 7 going down on the left and a known controlled demolition on the right. And guess what? They look exactly the same. So shouldn't the hypothesis of explosive controlled demolition been considered by NIST instead of relatively dismissed, especially in light of all of the molten metal found under the building, all of the witnesses, including Kevin McPadden and whistleblower Craig Bartmer from New York Police Department, citing evidence or sounds of explosion?
Go ahead, Dave, you want to respond to that? About
No, I'd just like to mention, it was not a symmetrical collapse. It did not collapse in its own footprint. It toppled across the street and hit the Verizon building, and it even toppled over as it was falling. It was not your classic controlled demolition. And basically, it was not free fall. A small percentage of the collapse, was it free fall because the structure that would have opposed it had already collapsed during the 16-second long collapse? It was a lot longer than the 6 seconds of free fall.
I have a question for Richard, and it's a process question, so pardon me on this, but is there anything that Dave says that is based on intellectual disagreement with you that isn't, as you just keep describing him, as dismissive and illogical? Are there points in which you can just disagree, but he's not being dismissive by disagreeing, he just disagrees with you?
Well, if he doesn't account for the physics, and he's a physicist, so he should be accounting for this, of the fact that 50 very stout moment-resisting perimeter columns did not give any resistance, like not even that of cotton candy, to the fall of this building that fell at free fall, then he's being dismissive and illogical. There is no getting around that.
Okay, Dave.
I think the NIST, you know, worked on this for years and years, and there are many indications that it was indeed a design flaw that was exacerbated by the fires that were building, you know, burning very hot. You know, when Richard says all the people, you know, the BBC announced it ahead of time. What were they in on the conspiracy? Were all the firemen in on the conspiracy because they wouldn't let people go near it? No. It was on fire. It was creaking. It was bending. It was going to collapse. And the call was made, evacuate people, that building's coming down. And what I want to know is, why did we even need World Trade Center 7 for this, you know, alleged conspiracy? We already had the two Twin Towers and the Pentagon. The country was upset enough. You know, who ordered this 47-story building at 520, you know, what was it for?
What was that for? As you imagine it, or at least as you see it, Richard, why is Building 7 so crucial to understanding that there was a conspiracy here?
Well, what we see in Building 7 is a smoking gun. It is the key to justice for the victims that have fallen in the Twin Towers. So a real investigation that I'm hoping Dave will support us in getting around these mysteries of the freefall will give us the answers, perhaps, if it's done with subpoena power, with an unimpeachable investigation.
But that's not the question. The question is, what would be the purpose of that? What would be the motive? If the World Trade Center, that's the big showpiece. I mean, obviously, if as tragic as it is, if you were saying that we're going to bring down some buildings, once you bring down Tower 1 and Tower 2, you know, if that's the conspiracy, if you were looking for a justification, for example, by some people's estimation, we were looking for a reason to go into Iraq. And that's why, as some people allege in the truth movement, that the government or agents within the government, planted these thousands of tons of explosives so they could justify an attack on Iraq. If once you've achieved those two, why bring down Building 7?
Ian, I would love to have the answer to that question just like you would. Really.
Who cut the 50? You said that there were 50 strong columns around Building 7 that were cut, right? You're saying that they were somehow disabled as columns?
They must have been. You can't have a building fall as fast as a bowling ball without resistance unless those columns are removed. Not only removed, but all at once within a tenth of a second of each other.
How do you so you're saying remove them, meaning with explosives?
Well, presumably that's the only way. At least that's the only way that's been used historically to bring down or demolish skyscrapers.
Okay, you're not saying it was pre-cut, like somebody went in there and removed them in advance.
Well, then a building would have fallen early.
Okay. So let's bring in your seconds. We'll start we'll introduce here Kim Johnson, who is an industrial physicist and works on the board for the New Mexicans for Science and Reason, also a past president of the New Mexico Academy of Science. He works with Dave Thomas. And then Niels Herit, who is a professor at the University of Copenhagen, and a chemist and university teacher with expertise in various disciplines, which would inform his positions on 9/11. Good evening to everybody.
Hello.
Good evening, Niels.
Niels Harris, Copenhagen here.
Okay. Thanks. I think fortunately with your accent, Niels, we'll know every time that it's you.
So thank you.
We'll at least be able to separate you out well from Kim. Let's start with Kim since Richard was the last one to speak. Kim, what are you hearing in this conversation? What are you hearing Dave saying that needs amplification or a response that you might bring to the table that you have not heard so far?
All right. Well, several things I've heard that I can expand on. One of the major things is that I have to say up front is that Dave has pretty well covered it. I hear nothing that he said about the physics of how these buildings probably fell that is wrong. It's just not there. I mean, this all makes perfect sense from a physics point of view. So, you know, the planes hitting it, it started falling where the planes were. That's where the falling initiated on WTC 1 and 2 was right exactly where the planes hit. And you can look at any video on the web you want, and you can see that. So it's kind of like, so somebody knew exactly where those planes were going to hit, and they had that fixed up so they could detonate it, and the planes didn't take out any of the explosives or detonate it or anything like that. That is kind of highly improbable. Another thing is that this residue, which Niels is going to talk about, being unexploded thermite, it's very fascinating. There were over 370 canines on site, most of which were cross-trained for explosive device finding. And even though we just heard that dogs can't find thermite, the fact is dogs are trained to find thermite, period. Most of these dogs are on site trying to find the remains of people. But many of them were cross-trained. There were six dogs on duty at the World Trade Center full-time to make sure that people didn't put bombs, wire the place up. Somebody didn't drive in the door with the van underneath and do what they did earlier, way back 10 years ago. None of these dogs found any remains of explosives. None of the dogs that were there ahead of time found explosives.
All right, let's jump to Niels Harrit, who's a associate professor at the University of Copenhagen, who's been working on the discovery of what is termed here highly energetic nano-engineered forms of thermite. Can you explain that, Doctor?
Well, these are... how long time do I have?
not too long to get too technical, but just in a broad stroke.
Okay, it is remains of unreacted thermitic material. And if we have to explain further what that is, it will take some time. But classical thermite, old-time thermite, which is an invention from 1993, was an incendiary, which is a very reactive, very heat-hot chemical reaction, producing molten iron at the temperature of 2,500 degrees centigrade. Somebody has to translate that into Fahrenheit.
Yeah, that's 45.
But it's very, very, very hot. It's capable of welding. It's capable of melting other metals, armor, and steel structures.
Let me ask you, Dr. Harrit, if you had to, knowing what you know about thermite and having looked at the World Trade Center towers, how much thermite would have been required to bring down the World Trade Center?
We don't know. And we don't know actually the scenario for the demolitions. And I think we should not waste too much time in speculating in hypothetical blast scenarios. We know from observation, and I noticed if I may comment just a little on what I've heard so far. I came on the phone here 10 minutes ago, that Richard was talking about real life. He was talking about observation. David was talking about a computer model. And this is fantasy. You can have your computer doing everything you want. So if you look actually at what was going on, it is crystal clear to everybody with two eyes and a brain that both explosives and incendiaries and thermite was used for the demolition of the three skyscrapers. And so it is. We can speculate as much as how much is being used of this and that. I'm not claiming that thermite is the only agent used for taking down WTC.
Well, when you say that anybody with two eyes and a brain will agree with you, that you're basically saying that anybody that doesn't agree with you, that it's something that you can't see, that something you can't see is there, then it comes kind of perilously close to the classic, you know.
I'm sorry for that. But I should be talk about myself then. But when I saw Building 7 going down the first time, and this was just 4 years ago, and I was not aware that there was a third skyscraper, this alone should cause some thinking. But there was an inner voice in me as a scientist being trained to see my physical surroundings with an analytical mind. What is going on here? And there was an inner voice in me, and this is what I was referring to for, I'm sorry about the brain stuff. This was what I had an inner voice who said, look at this, and I didn't understand. So I had to push the button 10 times, and my jaw dropped further and further down. It took me many weeks, actually, to realize what I had seen, but I could not hush my inner voice.
I respect that, and I think that's a great incentive for investigation. But if you don't use computer models and you simply go by testimony or observation of video, is that not incomplete science?
What do you mean simply? This is what science has been done since actually the middle of the 16th century.
I'm not sure I know what you mean by that.
Watching. Right. Just trust yourself. A computer model, you can make that do anything. This is what Josh Lucas is doing.
Okay. Dave or Kim, you want to respond to that?
I would like to say that I've got two eyes and a brain, and I've been a practicing scientist for at least as long as Niels has. And when I first saw WT7, a picture of it coming down, I could tell that I was not looking at the whole thing coming down. And kept searching the web until eventually I found a picture where it was side on and smoke was screaming out of it. I mean, it was just blowing. It was obviously in the chimney mode. It was sucking O2 in and or air in to burn, and it was burning. And so when I saw it, I said, holy cow, that building's going to come down too, unless it's got some sort of really super concrete reinforcement, which, as it turns out, it did, you know, it didn't have it. Just had steel. So, you know, I have the same two eyes, or similar two eyes, similar brain as Niels, and my conclusion when I first saw it was that puppy's going to come down. And sure enough, it came down. And when
May I respond to this?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay. Dave, why did you expect this building to come down?
I believe that was Kim, but go ahead. Kim?
Okay, I'm sorry, Kim. Why did I expect
it to come down because it was leaning, it was pulling in. You could see where it was pulling in, and the smoke coming out of it was horrendous. In other words, it was a tremendous fire, and my first thought was it's coming down. Now that's not a scientific thought, but that was you said observation. That was my observation. That was my feeling, and then of course the firemen who were on site. And started hearing these booms and cracks and creaks in it, and it wasn't the boom you get from cutting a girder, which I've heard before. Those are very loud cracks, very bright flashes. But these were booms that were being described as structural movement and probably expansion, bolts breaking, and all sorts of things like that. Any number of things could have caused them. And they said, holy cow, and it's moving. We've got to evacuate it. And you've got the police chief, Daniel Nigro is his name, came on and said that was one of the hardest decisions he ever made because he had to get his firemen out of there, and there were still firemen that were probably trapped, and he had to move people out of there because he knew that building was coming down.
We need to hold on to that. I know, Niels, you're going to want to respond to that. Dr. Niels Herit coming in along with our special 9/11 debate show, and we'll return with him next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, again, we'll get to your calls coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. We have four people on as of this last half hour. And then we'll go back to just Dave Thomas and to Richard Gage for the last hour to take your calls together. But for now, we'll continue with Kim Johnson and Niels Herit, both experts in their own way, on what's being discussed here tonight on Coast to Coast. 9/11. The official story, the mainstream story, the mainstream science, and the position of the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth that say there are more questions here that than are being asked by the official reports, and therefore more answers that have yet to be revealed. And we'll pick it up just where we left off there a second ago with Niels Herit about to respond to Kim Johnson. And we're talking about Building 7 for a little while longer. And then I do want to get into kind of a question of who and what. That if this is a murder mystery, I don't think it's unfair to ask why these buildings? And if, you know, what is the general consensus, if there is one, amongst the 9/11 truth organization as to what the truth really is about the why the World Trade Center, why then, and who would have been capable of pulling this off? I mean, if the BBC knew about it, if CNN knew about it, then who else would have known about it? Coming up on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. So we're talking about Building 7 of the 9/11 catastrophe, the mass murder that happened on 9/11, but from two different perspectives. Building 7 was on the table when I had to go to a break again, and Niels Herit, who's a professor at the University of Copenhagen, was just about to respond to Kim Johnson, who's a physicist from New Mexico. So, Dr. Herit,
yeah, I'm here.
What did you want to say in response to Kim?
Well, Kim said that when he saw Building 7 going down first, he would expect it to collapse subsequently. This is not possible since at that time, it had never happened before in history that a steel-framed high-rise would collapse due to fire. So nobody in the world, not the most experienced structural engineer, could foresee that. It was simply not in anybody's mind. You cannot foresee rain if it has never rained.
Okay, but wait, didn't it just rain that morning in the drop of World Trade Center 1 and 2?
Well, if you think so.
Well,
so no, it was three times. So, okay, it has never happened before in history. And there are about, as I've heard, about 400 reported fires in high frames in steel-framed high-rises, and none of them collapsed due to fire. So you have done the experiment. And this is what we scientists like. We love experiments. And the experiments have shown repeatedly that a steel-framed high-riser does not collapse due to fire. And still, Kim claims that this should happen three times at the same day?
All right, Kim?
May I respond to that? Number one, there's one building in it's a Madrid building in Spain that caught fire. There was
the Windsor Tower.
Huh?
The Windsor Tower, yeah.
No. Okay. It's not the Windsor Tower. It's another one. It's called, and I don't have it written down here. Dave may remember it if he's on the line. Dave, do you remember it? Or if he's not on the line, then we won't know. Anyway, which did not collapse, but all the steel collapsed, and the concrete stayed up.
You're referring to the Windsor Tower, and it's the other way around, but it doesn't matter.
No, I'm not.
I'm going to jump in here because I think we're in the weeds here for a second, but I want to ask Dr. Herit a question only because of something that I was just reading, and I was reading it in response to something that you had said, and so I was curious about it. The report I read said that one of the reasons why firefighters began to be suspicious that Building 7 was going to come down was not because of the fires. The fires were, they broke out after the fire officials on the scene were already afraid of the fall of Building 7 because of the debris that had landed on top of the building. And then that when because of the way the towers collapsed, it blew out a significant portion of the face of Building 7. And that because of that, just again, visually, the fire officials on the scene looked at that and they went, uh-oh, you can't have a building sustain that kind of damage without it being susceptible to coming down. And that's why they started to say to people, we got to get, you know, Building 7 is going to be the next casualty. And they started saying that at about 11 o'clock in the morning because of their understanding of engineering, even as a firefighter, and they saw a building that had gotten punched pretty hard in the face, and they were afraid that it was going to collapse.
May I agree with that? You know, when I first saw it, the first picture I saw was damage, and it was smoking like crazy, and that's why I thought it was going to come down. I said, this thing has been significantly damaged. Not only that, but it's heating up, and as it's heating up, it's weakening. It's going to come down. That was my gut feel. Experiment's been done, Niels. I think you saw it with Building 7.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry. You're both in violation of the NIST report. According to the report from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Building 7 did not come down due to any structural damage, and the structural damage on the south side was defined as not important. We're talking about 7 out of 57 perimeter columns.
I want to hear Dr. Herod. Go ahead. Yeah.
So you are in disagreement with the official account of the damage of World Trade Center 7.
So be it.
Two, no steel frame high riser has ever collapsed at all, not even due to earthquakes or whatever kind of damage in a symmetrical free fall speed. We should come back to the free fall speed because what Dave said before was not correct.
You can see in the pictures things that are free falling faster than the buildings are falling. You can go look on the web. I mean, visually, you can see that they're getting to the ground from the top almost twice as fast as the top is getting to the ground. So when you tell me it's at free fall speeds, I'm telling you, no, there's pictures you can see. Go to the web and look.
We've got a list of on this.
Okay. Dr. Herod, I want to hear, if I can. I appreciate what you had to say earlier, but let me just, Richard, you wanted to jump in there?
No, I didn't, but I can certainly say that NIST acknowledged that the building fell at free fall for 100 feet. So there's no question about the building, whether it fell at free fall or not. Not only that, before this, they were denying that it fell at free fall. They said if it fell at free fall, that would mean there'd be no structural elements underneath. Later, they are forced into a corner by physics teacher David Chandler and Stephen Jones, a PhD, who forced them to acknowledge that, yes, the building did fall at free fall, but then they come back after having admitted that they do not acknowledge the ramifications of a building falling at free fall, which is that there's no structure. So how, if there's no structure, where did it go? It had to be removed. Then it had to be removed sequentially within a tenth of a second of each other, every one of those columns, or the building would have tipped over, and it would have tipped over perhaps toward the side of its damage, which it did not do. It went pretty much straight down.
If you only look at the top,
I mentioned a while ago how, you know, the key column, 79, that was the major cause of the collapse, not the damage.
Okay.
Fire made it collapse. But I did want to mention one thing quickly. The Mumbai offshore platform near India in July of 2005, it was an oil platform. It was 7 stories. It was steel, and it collapsed, completely in a fire that resulted in 11 deaths and 11 missing. And
well,
so
I want to ask Dr. Harrod a question. I'm going to jump back in here and I'm going to grab the wheel for a second here, because Mike, this is something I don't understand about Building 7, so maybe Dr. Harrod can explain it. World Trade Center Building Number 7, I read, was also sort of a uniquely designed building in that the upper section of this building was supported by three main trusses. So it's you talk about it being a traditional steel frame structure, but was that true all the way through the building? I thought it was only that way up to a certain level, and then above that level, it was actually a different type of structure. Is that not true?
Well, I would, Richard should respond to this one. But as I understand, it was up to the seventh floor was kind of untraditional, because it was built for one quarter of the building on the top of the power station. So it was untraditional up until the seventh floor, but beyond that, I think it was quite uniform. Others should explain this, but it really doesn't matter. I mean, okay. No matter which steel-framed high-rise you're talking about, and most, I mean, importantly, are the experiments being carried out by British Steel from 1993 to 2001, where they have built 8 stories, full-scale model steel structures, and burned them down 7 times under complete control conditions. And in the worst-case scenario, it reached temperature in the steel of 1,100 degrees centigrade, and still the building remained standing.
Okay. Richard, why doesn't that settle it?
Well, what he's saying that fires do not destroy steel-frame skyscrapers. Or 8-story buildings in these test condition cases where the temperatures were up to 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. So what all they did was sag, and that's all that really would have happened is a gentle sagging. You don't have any catastrophic collapse because the connections are the most strongest part of this building. They can't give up at 400 structural steel connections failing per second, which is what would have had to have happened to facilitate a 6.5-second collapse.
Well, Dave Thomas, the physicist Dave Thomas, doesn't that make the case?
No, it doesn't, because that collapse wasn't just 6 seconds. It was at least 16 seconds, probably 20 seconds.
Well,
it was not just a simple 6-second free fall drop at all.
Okay.
And there was internal collapsing going along that it resulted in a very brief 2-second interval of free fall, and I just don't think that's enough to prove controlled demolition. It did not land in its own footprint. It tipped over, it splattered across the street, and broke the Verizon building and the Fitwater building.
Where did the structural steel columns go on the perimeter to facilitate that 6.5-second drop of the perimeter structure?
There must have been enough core columns removed by that time that they just weren't able to provide any additional resistance. They were not up to the task of preventing this collapse anymore, because so many key columns had collapsed by that time. It was a complicated collapse that progressed down and sideways.
I don't think we're going to progress any further on that for the moment, and since our time is coming up to the top of the hour and we're going to start bringing in other callers, I do want to ask Dr. Harrod.
Yes.
From an international perspective, you said before that you don't concern yourself with the questions other than the scientific ones. But before, when I asked you about how much thermite would have been responsible for bringing this building down, who could have brought it in, you seem to feel like that is something which is going to keep us from knowing the whole truth. But I get hung up there because I really do need to know if it was done, if this was something that was set up by whom. And I don't know if it's unfair to ask if you have at least a private opinion on who you think would have been responsible for 9/11. If it wasn't terrorist, if it wasn't Al-Qaeda, who was it?
Well, no, I actually I don't, because I can say is that the evidence, the physical evidence and the observations are in violation of the official conspiracy theory. I do not know or try to guess who's responsible for this, but I do know that it could not by any way be Osama bin Laden and the 19 hijackers.
How could it not be them?
It's impossible, because it's in violation with physical principles and observations.
Okay. Dave Thomas, let me ask you then what he said, or Kim, John, Kim, either way.
Yeah,
he
said, why don't you, this is
couldn't be Al-Qaeda, it couldn't be Osama bin Laden. Why couldn't it be?
There's no reason. I mean, we sat there and we watched it happen. It's not as, and there were no controlled demolition flashes. There were no noises that were loud enough like controlled demolition, which I've heard many times. And, you know, the fact is that Niels and I can disagree one way or the other, but when it comes down to it, I think you have hit the whole crux of the matter. That is, who did it? Right now, if I were Mr. Gage, I would be looking over my shoulder at the Ace Elevator people who he just said they had to be involved, and the security people, they had to be involved. That's what he said at the beginning of the program.
Right. I did want to get back to that. Richard, let me ask you about that, because you did bring that up and I made a note. Tell me about the Ace Elevator people and why they need to be investigated.
Yeah, I didn't say they were involved.
They need to be investigated.
Listen to the tape.
Yeah, no, I agree. They should be investigated. They were the ones that had access for the 9 months prior to 9/11 to the elevators, the largest elevator modernization in the world. They had 85 employees working in the core. So they wouldn't have been suspected by any of the tens of thousands of buildings and inhabitants. And they wouldn't have had to run, by the way, miles and miles of wire either, because wireless detonation is clearly a modern technology that could be of use here. Relative to the planes destroying these charges, it's interesting to note when you look at the videos that the explosions begin about three stories above the jet plane impact. So I'm sure that this was accounted for by, if one had control over that airplane, which is presumed, that the explosions start above it. So this wouldn't have impacted their ability to facilitate a controlled demolition, which is
Richard
exactly
Gage.
What we're seeing.
Okay, let me ask you again, Richard Gage, thank you. So yes or no, Muslim terrorists flew the planes into the World Trade Center?
Well, I don't know who flew the planes. I can tell you this. Did Muslim terrorists have access to the most highly sophisticated advanced nanocomposite materials known? And did they have access to the most secure buildings in the world? This is why Niels is saying it's an implausibility that Osama bin Laden could have been involved.
Okay.
I've got a question for Niels while we still got him on the air.
Go ahead.
And that is, you know, since this supposedly thermitic material would be so earth-shaking if what you claim about it is true, have you ever or do you have plans to have it tested by a truly independent lab to see if they come up with the same conclusion that it's active thermitic material?
Well, they can just go along. I mean, because the NIST should have loads of this dust. Why don't they investigate it?
What you saw, Niels, this is Kim, what you showed in your paper, which I read, and this is a vanity paper, which you paid for, I mean, to have published. So I'm not sure why you didn't send these samples off to independent labs, but you decided to do it yourself. And here you have ignition temperature down around 420 degrees or so, and that's not ignition temperature for thermite. So I'm curious what's going on here. What are you? The dogs couldn't find it. What you measure doesn't correspond with what the ignition temperature is. So you know, I'm kind of thinking, why would anybody go off and do a search for something when they saw these planes hitting the buildings? I mean,
I don't understand. Well, it'll have to stand right there then. And thank you, Dr. Niels, and also you too, Kim, and for our other two main guests, I ask you just to hang on to start taking the calls coming up. I know the phones are going to be very festive. I ask that everybody keep their questions succinct, because a lot of people want to get in a thought or two or a question for either our remaining guests, Richard Gage and Dave Thomas, coming up next on both sides of the 9/11 story on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.